Okay, picture this. It is a crisp November morning. You are sitting in a tree stand, maybe 20 feet up. The sun is just starting to cut through the mist. It is dead quiet. It is perfect. You aren't thinking about contracts. You aren't thinking about liability insurance. And you are definitely not thinking about a legal concept called the duty of care.
No, you were probably thinking about that 10-point buck you saw on the trail camera 3 days ago.
Exactly. That is where my head would be. But here is the thing, and this is what hit me hard while reading through the research for today's deep dive, that peace and quiet, it is resting on a legal minefield.
It really is. And most people don't realize the fuse is lit until it's, way too late.
Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we are heading into the woods, but we aren't talking about ballistics or tracking or the best camo pattern. We are talking about land, specifically the massive silent industry of hunting leases. We are basing this on a fascinating set of articles and risk analysis from the American Hunting Lease Association, the AHLA.
And I am really glad we are doing this one. Because on the surface, a hunting lease looks like the simplest transaction in the world. I pay you, I hunt on your land. Done. It feels very transactional.
That is what I thought. It's just rent, right? It's like an Airbnb for deer.
Airbnb for deer. I like that. But here's the problem with that analogy. When you rent an Airbnb, you expect a roof that doesn't leak, stairs that don't collapse.
Sure, basic safety.
Exactly. A driveway that isn't a sheet of ice. When you lease 500 acres of rugged timber, who is responsible when a dead tree falls on you? Or when you trip into an old well?
Or, and this is a scenario from the notes that actually made me sweat, when you make a mistake and shoot the neighbor's dog.
That is the nightmare scenario. And as we are going to see, the difference between financial ruin and a funny story at Thanksgiving usually comes down to a few pieces of paper.
The ones that most people never bother to read. So, our mission today is simple. We are going to unpack why this system leasing land for hunting has been around for 90 years. We are going to look at why it is booming right now.
And then the hidden risks.
But then we're going to look at the hidden risks, because if you get this wrong, whether you are the hunter or the landowner, the consequences are severe.
It is about shifting the mindset. We need to move from neighborly favor to business arrangement.
Let's start there. The history. I was surprised to see this has been happening for nearly a century. I sort of assumed this was a modern thing, like Uber.
It has been around a long time, but the vibe has changed completely. Historically, letting someone hunt your back 40 was a handshake deal.
Totally.
Maybe you get a ham at Christmas or some venison sausage, or they fix a fence for you. It was social, it was neighborly.
Right. Go have fun. Just shut the gate behind you.
Exactly. But the moment money changes hands, real money, a lease fee, the law changes its entire view of you.
How so?
You are no longer a neighbor helping a neighbor. You are a landlord. You are a service provider. And that creates a legal concept called duty of care.
That sounds heavy. Duty of care.
It is heavy. It means you have an affirmative obligation to keep your customer safe. And that creates a tension,
Right, of
right?
course.
Because hunting is inherently dangerous.
Well, this is where I get stuck. If I am a landowner and taking money makes me liable for safety in a wild forest, why would I ever sign a lease? Why not just kick everyone off, lock the gate, and sleep soundly at night? It seems like the risk outweighs the reward.
That is the million-dollar question. And the answer, according to the AHLA data, is that the benefits, when done right, are just too good to ignore.
It's a calculation.
It is a classic risk versus reward calculation.
Okay, walk me through the reward. I get the money part. Land is expensive, taxes are high, cash is king. But the source material mentions control. How does letting strangers on your land give you more control?
Think about the alternative. If you just leave your land open, or if you are an absentee landowner who lives 3 hours away, you have zero control.
None at all.
You don't know who is there. You have poaching. You have trespassing. You have kids partying down by the creek.
So the lease is actually a security measure.
In a way, yes. When you lease your land to a specific group of hunters, they become your eyes and ears.
Oh, I see.
They want to keep poachers out because they paid for the exclusive rights. So suddenly, you have unpaid security guards patrolling your property lines.
That makes sense. It's like hiring a bouncer, but the bouncer pays you.
Exactly. And then there is the wildlife management aspect. If you are a farmer, deer are basically giant rats that eat your profits. They destroy soy, they destroy corn.
A huge problem.
A lease ensures you have a dedicated team managing that population, reducing crop depredation without you having to go out there and do it yourself.
Okay, I'm sold on the landowner side. cash, security, pest control, but let's flip the script.
For the hunter.
I am looking at this list of 5 advantages for the hunter. And I have to be honest, as someone who has tried to hunt on public land, this list spoke to me on a spiritual level.
Public land can be challenging.
Challenging is polite. It is a zoo. I remember walking into a spot at 4 a.m. once, thinking I was alone, and seeing 4 flashlights bobbing around the tree I wanted to sit in. It ruined the whole morning.
That is advantage number 1, less competition. When you lease, you aren't fighting for space. It is yours. You aren't racing anyone to the spot.
Which honestly feels safer, too. I don't have to worry about some guy I don't know setting up 50 yards behind me and shooting in my direction.
Precisely. That leads to number 2. Population control. On public land, usually the mentality is if it's brown, it's down.
Right.
People shoot the first thing they see because they know if they don't, the next guy will. On a lease, you can manage for quality. You can let the younger bucks walk.
We can manage the herd.
You can actually manage the herd health because you know they will probably still be there next year.
Which you can only do if you have number 3, reliability.
Right. Knowing the land will be there, you can leave your tree stand up, you can plant a food plot, you aren't tearing down your gear every single night.
That is the one that gets me. The amount of effort to set up and tear down a mobile hunting setup is exhausting. Being able to leave your gear, that is a luxury.
And that luxury allows for number 4, strategy freedom. You could use the trail cameras without them getting stolen. You can scout patterns over weeks, not just hours.
You can actually hunt the animal.
Yes, rather than just hoping one walks by.
It sounds like a dream. Hunter gets a big buck and a private experience. Landowner gets a check in security. Win-win.
It is a win-win. Until it isn't.
And this is the turning point the source material talks about. We need to talk about the duty of care again. Because this is where the dream can turn into a courtroom drama.
So let's get technical for a second, but I will keep it simple.
Please.
In property law, there are different classes of visitors. If I invite you over for a barbecue as a friend, you are a social guest. My liability is low.
Okay.
If you trip on a rug, it is mostly on you.
Okay, that makes sense.
But if I charge you $50 to enter my barbecue,
yeah,
you are now a business invitee. I am profiting from your presence.
And the rules change?
Therefore, the law says I have a heightened duty to inspect the premises and warn you of dangers.
But hold on. We are talking about the woods. There are briar patches, snake holes, cliffs.
Mm.
You can't bubble wrap a forest.
No, you can't.
If I pay to hunt, I expect it to be wild.
And the law knows that.
Yeah.
You aren't responsible for obvious dangers or things inherent to nature, like a thunderstorm or a snake bite. But you are responsible for known, non-obvious dangers.
Give me an example. What counts as a non-obvious danger in the woods?
An abandoned, well-covered by tall grass.
Oh, okay.
A dilapidated barn that looks sturdy but is about to collapse. A bridge over a creek that has rotted supports. If you know about it and you take money from someone to be there, you must warn them.
So how do you handle that? Do you put up wet floor signs in the woods?
No. The mitigation strategy is actually really low tech.
Right.
It is the walkthrough. The source material emphasizes this heavily.
Just walk the property.
You walk the property with the hunter. You say, see that pile of boards. Don't step there. See that old well. We need to mark that.
And I'm guessing here you write it down.
You absolutely write it down. Yeah. If it is not in writing, it didn't happen.
Okay. So we have the walkthrough.
Okay.
But most people rely on the holy grail of liability protection.
The waiver.
The waiver. The release of liability. I feel like I signed 5 of these a week. Trampoline parks, gyms.
Everything.
The assumption is, I signed it, so I can't sue you. But the AHLA blog calls this a common misconception. Are you telling me waivers don't work?
I'm praying they are like a bulletproof vest that only covers your chest.
Okay.
They work for specific things, but they leave your head and your legs completely exposed.
That is unsettling. I always thought they were an iron shield.
The waiver is a contract between 2 people, you and me. You agree not to sue me. That is great. But it cannot stop a third party from suing me. And it doesn't cover every possible scenario.
Okay, we need to make this concrete. The source material lays out 2 scenarios that are honestly terrifying. I want to walk through these because they show exactly where the handshake deal or the generic waiver falls apart.
Let's do it. These scenarios are where the rubber meets the road.
Scenario 1, I call this the neighbor's dog.
This one is classic.
So you have a responsible hunter. He has leased your land. He is in the stand. It is dusk. Visibility is low. He hears crunching leaves. He sees a gray shape moving through the brush.
Thinks coyote?
He thinks coyote. And in many states, coyotes are open season year-round. They are considered pests.
Right. He's doing you a favor, technically.
Right. He lines up the shot. He pulls the trigger.
But it wasn't a coyote.
No, it was the neighbor's prize-winning German Shepherd, or maybe just their beloved family pet. The dog is dead. The neighbor is devastated.
And then furious.
And then the neighbor gets furious. Here comes the lawsuit. The neighbor sues the landowner. They say, you allowed a reckless person with a gun onto the property next to my house. You are negligent.
And the landowner pulls out the waiver.
Now, the landowner says, wait, the hunter signed a waiver. He promised I am not liable for his actions.
And the judge says, that is nice, but the neighbor didn't sign the waiver.
Oof.
This is the concept of privity of contract. It is a vital legal concept. The contract is only binding on the people who signed it. The neighbor has no relationship to that waiver.
It's useless.
Completely useless against the neighbor's lawsuit. The landowner is exposed. Personal assets, savings, the land itself, it is all at risk.
Just because your tenant made a mistake, that feels incredibly unfair to the landowner. They weren't even there.
It feels unfair, but that is how premises liability works.
Yeah.
You invited the risk onto the property.
Okay, scenario two. This one feels even more unfair, honestly. I call this the dead tree.
This is a textbook premises liability case.
Hunter is on the lease. He climbs a tree with a climbing stand. He doesn't realize the tree is dead and rotted on the inside. He gets 20 feet up.
Snap.
SNAP. The tree breaks. He falls. We are talking broken back, paralysis, massive trauma.
Life-changing injury.
This is a life-changing injury. Now, in this case, the hunter did sign the waiver. He agreed to accept the risks of hunting. So the landowner thinks, it is tragic, but I am protected.
But the hunter isn't the only victim. He has a family. He has a wife. He can't work.
Yeah.
The medical bills are piling up. The mortgage isn't getting paid.
So the wife sues the landowner.
Yes. And the landowner waives the waiver and says, look, he signed it. And the wife says, I didn't.
Wait, can she do that? Can she sue for an accident that happened to her husband?
She can. It is often called a claim for loss of consortium or loss of support.
Yeah.
She is suing for the damages she's suffering, the loss of her husband's income, his companionship,
wow,
his help raising the kids. Since she never signed the waiver, she is a third party. The waiver does not block her lawsuit.
That is wild. So a waiver is basically Swiss cheese. It is full of holes.
It has value. It stops the hunter himself from suing for pain and suffering in many cases. But for the big catastrophic stuff involving other people, it is not enough.
So what is the solution? If waivers fail and handshakes are dangerous, how does this industry survive?
The bridge over the gap is hunting lease liability insurance.
Okay, I hear insurance and my eyes glaze over a bit. But in this context, it seems like a lifeline. How does insurance fix the dog scenario?
Okay, back to the dead dog. The neighbor sues the landowner. If you have a specific hunting lease liability policy, the insurance company steps in. And here's the key. It creates a duty to defend.
What does that mean?
It means the insurance company pays for the lawyers.
Ah, which is huge. Even if you win the case, the legal fees could bankrupt you.
Exactly. A defense in a negligence case can cost $50,000, $100,000 easily.
Mm.
The insurance policy covers those defense costs. They handle the headache. They negotiate the settlement.
The landowner doesn't have to sell the farm.
Right. They don't have to sell the farm to pay the attorney.
Now, what about the dead tree scenario? The wife suing.
Two things happen here. First, most of these policies have a medical pay provision.
Mm.
It is a smaller amount, maybe $5,000 or $10,000, that pays out immediately for medical bills, regardless of whose fault it was.
That is like a goodwill payment.
It is a calm everyone down payment. It helps the family immediately without needing a lawsuit.
Okay.
But if the wife does sue, the liability coverage kicks in again to defend the landowner. And remember the walkthrough.
Right, pointing out the dangers.
If the landowner did the walkthrough, pointed out the dead tree, and documented it, the insurance company uses that to prove the landowner fulfilled their duty of care.
They win the case.
They win the case. The landowner is safe.
But there is one specific detail the expert in the source mentioned. A typo or a missing name can ruin this. The additional insured.
Yes. This is critical. Usually the hunters buy the insurance policy. It is cheap for them, split among the group. But the landowner must be listed by name as an additional insured on that certificate.
If they aren't listed.
Then the insurance company represents the hunters, not the landowner. If the hunters get sued, they are fine. If the landowner gets sued, they are on their own.
It is such a small paperwork detail.
But it is the difference between being shielded and being naked in court. You have to check the certificate.
So let's try to build the perfect arrangement. If I am a landowner or a hunter who wants to do this the right way, what is the checklist?
Based on the AHLA best practices, it is a four-step process. Step one, the walkthrough. Physically walk the land together. Identify the hazards.
Got it.
Step two, the written lease. Put the rules in writing, including the hazards you found.
Makes sense.
Step three, the insurance. Buy a hunting lease liability policy and crucially list the landowner as an additional insured.
And step four?
Step four is the upper echelon tool, the indemnification clause.
Break that down. Indemnification. That sounds like something you'd hear in a John Grisham novel.
It is a fancy word that acts like a boomerang. It basically says, if I get sued because of something you did, you have to pay me back for my losses.
So if the neighbor sues the landowner for the dead dog and wins, the landowner can use the indemnification clause to make the hunter pay the bill.
Correct. It shifts the financial burden back to the person who actually pulled the trigger.
Talk about layers of protection. Waiver, insurance, indemnification.
It sounds like a lot of paperwork for a weekend in the woods.
Yeah.
But think about the asset we are protecting. Land is generational wealth. It is your legacy.
And you don't want to lose it.
You don't want to lose it because of one bad split-second decision by a stranger.
It really changes how I view the simple life of the outdoors. We tend to think of nature as an escape from the modern world, from rules and lawyers. But this deep dive makes it clear you can't escape the legal reality.
You can't. And honestly, a good contract makes for better relationships. When everyone knows the rules and everyone knows they are protected, you can actually relax. You can enjoy the hunt.
That is the irony, right? The more legal work you do up front, the more peace of mind you have in the stand.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up, this discussion sparked a thought for me. We have been talking about hunting, but this concept, the failure of waivers, the risk of handshake deals, it applies to everything, doesn't it?
It does. And that is the question I want to leave the listener with. You probably have people on your property all the time.
Sure.
Maybe you let a neighbor fish in your pond. Maybe you let the local kid sled down your hill in the winter. Maybe you hired a friend's teenager to cut some limbs off a tree.
And you think, it is fine, we are friends.
Right. But if that kid hits a rock sledding and breaks a leg, or that chainsaw slips, does your homeowner's insurance cover a business arrangement?
Probably not.
Did you warn them about the rock? If a waiver is only as good as the person signing it, what other simple agreements in your life are actually one accident away from becoming a courtroom drama?
That is a thought that will definitely make me double check my own insurance policy tonight. Thank you for that terrifying but necessary perspective.
Stay safe out there.
And thank you to you, the listener, for joining us on this deep dive. Hopefully you feel a little smarter, a little more prepared, and a lot more aware of what you are signing. We will catch you on the next one.